We are nice here. Good morning. Welcome to the show. Bill Ryder with you. Is it only Tuesday? Is that the day of the week that we're at? Hard to keep track when there's two Monday night football games. It feels like I'm coming off a Sunday. One of them makes a definitive statement about the state of the NFC. We will get into that in just a few minutes. We have a great show planned for you. Look, I have nothing against the Toronto Blue Jays. I really don't. Happy for them. That George Springer home run was historical, might be the greatest home run in Toronto Blue Jays history. It was hit basically the same place as the one in 93. My heart does break for the Mariners, though. It can be both. I can be happy for the Blue Jays and their fans, and I can feel, as a fan of long-suffering fan bases, what that is like. I understand the heartache that has not gone away this morning. And we'll get into how the Mariners were, what, eight outs, I think? I don't even want to remember. I just shudder at the thought from their first ever World Series appearance. And then they weren't. That's baseball. It'll break your heart. Sports will break your heart. NFL Power Rankings coming up on the show. My good friend Brady Papinga. He always brings a jazzy, sunlight, happiness, positive vibe. We'll visit with my guy. He won a Super Bowl with the Packers. We'll do buy or sell. Lots of things to get to. Andrew Bogish on updates. The one and only Ryan Hickey is the executive producer. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. One of the things I love about the NFL, and I say this all the time, is that it reveals surprises and itself every season in ways we do not anticipate. And that means that if you are a sports fan, if you have an opinion, if you have the guts to say something out loud, if maybe you host a sports talk radio show, it's going to prove you wrong sometimes. It's going to slap that smile off your face when you're saying things like, look, Dan Campbell's a good motivator, but I'm not sure he's the brains behind that football team. Ben Johnson was the guy on offense. Aaron Glenn was the guy on defense. It could all come crumbling down. Now that, this past offseason, his coordinator has gone somewhere else. You know, hear that sound? That's football. That's Dan Campbell. If not biting my kneecaps off, slapping that smile off my face, I was wrong. A lot of football was wrong. Dan Campbell's the guy. He's always been the guy. And that is why that team, because of that head coach, remain and are the best team in the NFC. What a win last night against a Buccaneers squad that had a claim before Monday Night Football got going to be in that team. And the effort from Detroit, the excellence from Detroit, the toughness from Detroit, it's all got to come in the context of not just losing. Look, Ben Johnson's a really good coach. Clearly, Ben Johnson is an impressive guy. He's got the Bears functioning at nearly a top 10 level in terms of offense. They're winning football games. Caleb Williams looks like a quarterback that maybe Chicago can rely on. And yet the magic that Ben Johnson has was not something he just took with him and left Detroit with zero. Because this is a Detroit offense that since we put aside week one, put aside the hangover of last season, you know, put aside the adjustments of losing your offensive coordinator, since week two, the Detroit Lions are averaging 33.5, actually it's 33.6 points per game. That's the best in the National Football League over that stretch. Since that week one game, so just week two, they're averaging 376, just about, yards per game. That's good for second in the National Football League. And you look at the defense last night, they were missing all five of their starters in the secondary. Against a Tampa Bay team with Baker Mayfield, that's capable of putting some points on the board. And they shut down Tampa Bay. I don't know if it's heart, I don't know if it's motivation, I don't know if it's tactical excellence, I don't know if Dan Campbell gets guys to bite kneecaps off and or is able to put together an X's and O's plan that we don't see, that he doesn't talk about at the microphone as often, that befuddles every other team that they play against. They're for real because of that guy. And Campbell came to the podium yesterday, again a winner. Again boasting a football team that just finds ways to win. And remember, we have criticized this guy, and I've done it. This guy's gambling, right? I'm going to go for it on fourth down. I'm going to be risky. I'm going to take chances. And it's easy, and maybe maybe legitimate to go back a couple years ago against the 49ers in the NFC Championship game, to go back last year when they won that game against the Vikings and didn't quite at the end of the regular season, and they didn't capitalize in the playoffs on having that opportunity to say, oh, the gambling doesn't work. But you know what it does? It is Dan Campbell saying to that football team, I believe in you. I think you can do this. I'm not coaching scared, and we're not playing scared. And that means when you roll out a starting defense, missing five starters in the secondary, the other guys believe, the football team believes. And Campbell, and I think these words matter, when you're playing for a boss that you love, that believes in you, that makes you better, when you're working for somebody that you trust and you know has your back, you perform at a higher level. And so Dan Campbell saying things like, I'm proud of these guys, it's real and it resonates and it affects not just what we just saw last night against Tampa Bay, but I think what we're going to see going forward this season.
We got a special group. We got a special group of coaches and players. And I just think they're competitive. They want to win. They're able to really focus on what needs to be fixed, what cost us the loss the week before, and simply keep it in that department, man.
Yeah. Hey, man, you get all the credit and you get all the love and you get all the praise today. Because I think Detroit was a pretty good team, sure. But I thought there was going to be a come down. I thought there was going to be an impact. I thought there was going to be, and it's easy to take shots at Aaron Glenn. I mean, Aaron Glenn as a head coach is a train wreck again and again and again. But the reason that people rise to their level of incompetence is because of their remarkable competence at the level before that. Aaron Glenn is not a good head coach. He was a great coordinator. And I don't want us to look past what it is, if you're Dan Campbell, to lose the two most important coaches on your staff, having almost won a Super Bowl, or at least made one a few years ago, and been the best team in the NFC last year for most of the season until the playoffs rolled around, and to have to reset and start over and maintain that level of belief. And this is where it gets into that defense last night. The offense was really good. Jared Goff has been outstanding. I just gave you the stats earlier in this conversation about why, even without Ben Johnson, Detroit continues to put points on the board. So had they won last night 33-28, same outcome, great football team. Look what Dan Campbell's done. This is impressive. This is the best team in the NFC, in a wide-open NFC where a lot of teams aren't what we thought they were going to be, where there's a lot of depth, but no team pulling away, where the Eagles' offense is remarkably inconsistent. Had somehow Detroit won a shootout because their defense was banged up, I would have said, all right, good job, way to go. That's really impressive. I guess they moved on past Ben Johnson just fine. All those offensive numbers are real. But they didn't just do that. They didn't just, and 24 points, good outing. They shut down a Tampa Bay offense. They shut down a quarterback in Baker Mayfield, who was rightfully, and may still be, an MVP candidate, with, again, all five of their guys in the secondary, all five of their starters out, gone. And next man up, and next man up, and next man up, and next man up, and next man up again. We're getting to practice squad territory, at least of guys that are going to be dressed for that game. They got it done because this is a Detroit team that is about their head coach, that epitomizes his level of belief. I always bring up the bite the kneecaps thing because it makes me laugh. But because I laughed at something back then I didn't understand, he meant it. There's a toughness there. There's a we will punch you in the face and then we'll smile afterwards sensibility to this team. And Campbell talked about how the defense that shouldn't have been able to be that effective, not with the personnel they were missing, utterly dominated Tampa Bay.
I had confidence. Now, I didn't think 9 points. I mean, 9 points now, I don't know where that ranks for all the games in this week. That's probably number one, I mean, or close to it. I don't know. So it's just a great job, but I knew we'd hold our own.
Look, there's a long ways to go. There's a long road of football in front of us. But this is a Detroit team that this year is eighth in the NFL in yards allowed per game. Last year, this was one of their weaknesses. Last year, they were 20th. And I like to draw comparisons to the Kansas City Chiefs, and I know some people get annoyed because they want to pretend the Chiefs aren't in the National Football League. But one of the things that the Chiefs were able to do to transition from probably going to make the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, to they're going to win the Super Bowl, is they were a bad defensive team early in the Mahomes era, Reed Mahomes era. And then the defense got really, really good. And that is why they've gone from being probably going to be the team to the team you have to beat. And why they've won 3 Super Bowls. Detroit, and I know that the Goff ain't Mahomes. I get it. And you got to see it, and you got to see it in the playoffs. And that's real, and that's fine. This is a Lions team that has gone from being a really good offense that we credited Ben Johnson with creating and a poor defense that would take risks and at times outperform its yards per game and points per game. It would win in these sort of big moments. And again, that is the Dan Campbell go for it, toughness, mantra, alpha, strutting, infusing the guys with a sense of belief. That Detroit team last year outperformed its defensive numbers because it won the big moments until the playoffs rolled around. And it's transitioned, kind of like the Chiefs did, like a lot of these teams have to do, to at least so far this year being an elite-level defense. And that was true before this game. That was true before the bright lights of Monday Night Football pitted two of the best teams in the NFC in a mid-season, third of the way through the season game that was going to give us who, at least right now, the best team is in the conference. It's Detroit. But it also gave an opportunity for this defense that was banged up to pronounce themselves a huge part of why this team can be outstanding, why this team is for real, why this team is legit. And if they can be this elite defensively, if they're capable of being this good when they're missing critical guys against a quarterback in Baker Mayfield who usually takes advantage of any opportunity an opposing team gives them, injuries or otherwise, that means that Detroit's gotten to a more elite level than they've been in the past. And the only question for them, and it's a fair criticism, it's a real thing, it's where I come up, I go at Dallas all the time on this, so I'll bring it up. You have to be able to win the big game. You have to be able to win in the playoffs. And there is this, I think, growing idea, this buzz, that maybe Detroit's really good, but they're not a, they can't win in the playoffs. Dan Campbell goes for it too much. He gambles. It's wrong. They were one half of football away from making the Super Bowl, and basically the first time that Dan Campbell and his team got a taste in their arms around being this level of a football team. So we know they can do it. Dallas Cowboys haven't done that in some lifetimes of a lot of you listening. We know that Dan Campbell's football team can do that. And again, I don't mind the gamble in Campbell. I don't mind it. Get it. That level of belief. But if you just throw in the fact that this defense is markedly better than last year, that the offense hasn't taken a step backwards, this is a Detroit team that's not just because they beat Tampa Bay and they beat the crap out of them last night, the best team in the NFC. They are still progressing and building toward being a team that's capable of winning a Super Bowl. And if we're going to look at the Buffalo Bills, after a much longer amount of runway, by the way, having not done it, and say, yeah, Buffalo hasn't gotten past Kansas City, but we know they can do it because it's a process. If we're going to look at, not for me, but many of you, the Baltimore Ravens, and we're going to say, all right, like Lamar's had some trouble in the playoffs, but hey, made a conference championship and got to, again, get past the Chiefs, but they're building the right direction. If we're going to look at Philadelphia and say, hey, that loss from the Super Bowl a few years ago was part of the process of winning last year, the same logic applies to Detroit. Most teams have to build the process of getting to and then winning the Super Bowl. And it's not a seven-year timeline, usually, I get it, but over 3 or 4 or 5 years, when you have the right person, when you have the catalyst, when you find the secret ingredient, and it's usually the quarterback, right? It's usually, we got Burrow, we got to do this, we've got Josh Allen, we better get it done, we've got Lamar, we better get it done, we've got Patrick, we're going to win a bunch of them. In this case, it's Dan Campbell who's the right guy. It's Dan Campbell who's the ingredient. It's Dan Campbell whose approach to whatever he does rejuvenated Jared Goff, and that continued when Ben Johnson left. It's Dan Campbell's bite off kneecaps and motivate the guys and be tougher than everybody else that allows a football team to go out there against a really good Tampa Bay team and shut them down regardless of the personnel that's missing. We are watching in real time a Super Bowl contending football team build themselves into somebody who should be taken every bit as seriously as the Bills, as the Ravens, as the Eagles last year before they got it done. The Chiefs are their own category, but after that are the teams that if it weren't for the Chiefs should be favored, and Detroit just reminded us they're one of them, and Dan Campbell just reminded us he's the reason why. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4ISN. All right, let's, man, there's so much to get to. I'm going to recommend a new TV show to Ryan Hickey that he's never going to watch. That's really exciting. There was another Monday Night Football game last night. Not as exciting, but it was a pretty, we're going to talk about it. Two interesting teams. And we're going to get into the heartbreak for the Mariners and the joy for the Blue Jays next here on Rider Than You.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast. Welcome back to Rider Than You.
I don't know if I'll be invited to the wedding, but if I am, I expect the vow to be for better or better. I feel like sometimes on the show, we stumble onto magic on accident. for better or better, might be one of the all-timers. Rewriting how marriage vows work. Half of marriages end in divorce. So maybe setting expectations early properly, right? If you're a for better or better person, just get it in the vow.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Welcome back into Rider Than You, where we are here for you for better or better. Bill Ryder with you on the show. 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. Ryan, remind me, my head is swimming a little bit with all the NFL and baseball stuff going on. We have four people left in the survivor pool?
Four left, and last week we went a perfect 4-for-4.
All right. And a bunch of you want to weigh in. Are you buying the Lions? Are you worried about the Bucks? And let's get to some phone calls. 888-710-4ISN. It's our guy Billy Bones in Boise. Billy Bones, good morning. Happy Tuesday, brother. You're on Rider Than You.
Hey, Bill. Nice to talk to you. You and Ryan are so awesome. I love the show, first of all.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, man. Second of all, I looked up this stat before I called. So going back to 77, the Lions have beaten us 34 times, and we beat them 30 times. So it's pretty close, but I know in the recent years they've been just destroying us. Last night, terrible. The defense did great, in my opinion. Baker was off for sure. But also, I didn't understand the call where they reviewed it, and then they went back and reviewed it again and reversed the call. I didn't think that was a thing. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
I'm at the point where I don't even know what the officials are doing. All right, let me ask you this. It's one football game. Are you still buying the Bucks as a team? And we've seen this before. That can win at least a playoff game, and that means, right, you're fighting for something when it matters most.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, that we're still a playoff team. Mike Evans going out last night, though, man. That's just heartbreaking. Yeah. So sad. I mean, he was going to be on track to break the record, you know, over 1,000 yards every season. And that's obviously done now. But, yeah, I think we're still a playoff team. I know that we're really banged up, too. Like, offensively, we've had troubles with the line, and wide receivers obviously keep getting hurt. But I think we still are up there. We play the Saints next week, which should be an easy win. And then we go into the bye week, hopefully get some more people healthy.
The Saints you know what? I just trigger fingered you, and it's been a long time since I did that. Dang it, Billy Bones. I'm sorry, bro. The Saints are a get-right remedy, right? If things aren't going well, if you lost a heartbreaking game, as you noted, if you just lost Mike Evans for what looks like the season or most of the remainder of the season with a broken bone, playing the Saints is always – I could use a little play the Saints. Keep losing to tennis. That would get me right. So that – look, I'm not going to overreact to Tampa Bay losing. And Evans is a huge loss. It's a good football team. Baker Mayfield is that guy when it comes to the playoffs. Personally, I just think the Lions are that good. I think it's that impressive a performance. And you do learn in life, and certainly in the NFL, you learn how to win, and you learn how to lose in games where it's particularly challenging or daunting or there's something on the line. And I know it's an October game and it's not the end of the world, but when you're missing literally your entire secondary, when all those guys are gone, there's a couple ways to respond. And a lot of football teams, the team that I root for, Chicago Bears, a team like the Dallas Cowboys, who I know are playing well, a lot of teams can fall back on excuse. It's not my fault. Doom and gloom. The sky is falling. Winners win. Winners win. And the thing about Detroit is that's what I saw last night. No excuses like there weren't when Glenn and Johnson went away. No excuses because you're banged up. No excuses for any reason. Go out there and find a way to win football games. I'm in on Detroit. Not everybody is. I'm not sure Ed is. Ed's listening in Pennsylvania. Ed appreciates you. You might have a different view than me. Ed, what do you got on the Lions? You're on Rider Than You.
Hey, Bill, thanks for taking my call. I love the show. I'm on the other side of this. All that trickery works until it doesn't. I feel like everybody's saying, oh, he's so innovative, but I feel like being innovative would be being in the middle. Sometimes you punt it, sometimes you kick a field goal. I feel like just going for it every single time is its own version of stubbornness. And I just feel like they're going to get to a point where they're going to be up, and then he'll go for it, and then it'll be like the Niners game a couple years ago all over again. Like, I feel like he'll get them to that point, but the same thing that got them there will also keep them from advancing.
Yeah, look, I there's no – thanks for the call. It's a good point. There's no guarantee that any approach is going to work, right? And it's certainly provable that there are times where Dan Gamble Campbell goes for it in situations that are problematic, and we've seen it. And I'm not going to pretend, because the thing about that approach is, over a big timeline, it works, right? The math tells you that it works. It's part of the reason he's doing it. But the sample size of one in an NFC Championship game is different than a sample size of going for it 39 times over three seasons or whatever the numbers are. So there may be moments where it costs him. There's two thoughts I have on this. One, I'd rather have a coach who's going to bet on himself and have guts and maybe lose than a coach who's a coward and doesn't know how to go for it. This is an old school reference, but I'd rather have tin cup, maybe don't hit the ball in the water eight times, than Don Johnson. Always being safe when you have to go for it, because that's what's required. So when that brass rings in front of him, when the moment presents itself, Dan Campbell's not going to be afraid to try and seize it. He may fail because he tries too hard or he tries to in a too risky way. But I'll take that over the cowards out there coaching in the NFL who are coaching scared. And that doesn't guarantee it's going to work. It just guarantees if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down with somebody that I respect and that I think gives me a little bit of an edge over the other dudes who do it the opposite way. And then the other thing, for me, Ed, and this is me, and I said this at the start of the show, and this is real for me, I do think the human psychology of things matters. And I'm not an anti-sabermetrics analytics guy. You want to give me the numbers? I think they're interesting. When I'm writing about the NBA, I use them. I think they matter in baseball. They matter in football. They matter. But they don't matter to the exclusion of the fact that these are human beings that are competing. And people have good days and bad days. And their wives break up with them or they don't break up with them. Or they're in a slump or they're not in a slump. I mean, even Shohei Ohtani, one of the greatest players in the history of the sport, could not hit the baseball in the postseason. And then he had maybe the greatest individual performance in the history of a single game in any sport ever. And that included three home runs. My point is, there's a human psychology to things. And we haven't really talked about Shohei enough. Maybe part of the reason Shohei played as well as he did in that game several days ago is because he was also in the midst of pitching six shutout innings and a two-hitter, and that gets you into a confidence, right? Just like a shooter, like Steph Curry getting a layup can actually impact Steph Curry making five of the next six threes. And Dan Campbell going for it and telling his guys, I believe in you, and being fearless can make his guys be fearless. We've all played sports to a sort of different degrees. We've all done professional things that are scary. We've all done things that are scary. I remember when I was in college, and I'm glad I'm married 20 years. If you're listening, Lori, I love you. All the other women meant nothing, whatever. You know, whatever that I chased. But it was fun. What I realized, the difference between me in college and high school was I realized that being nervous made me feel alive. Where I was nervous to ask girls out in high school and still did it was a little awkward. In college, I'm like, the nervousness is just part of the deal. The outcome is secondary. And that can have an impact. My point is, Dan Campbell leans into, yeah, it's scary. Yeah, it's nervous. Yeah, we're going for it. Yeah, it's fourth and two. I don't give a bleep. Let's do it. That can be infectious. It can change the way that guys approach things. And so, yeah, is he going to gamble sometimes? An individual moment's going to be a problem? Yes, it is. I just think there's an impact on the entire football team and what it does for those guys that Jared Goff is the best version of himself because he believes in himself. And the defense is the best version of itself no matter who's not on the field because they believe in their coach. And beyond that, it helped, I think, bridge what would have been natural doubts if you're on that football team. All right, well, Ben's gone and Aaron's gone. The coordinators are gone. Are we still going to be good enough? I think the gamble and Campbell has impacts beyond just making fourth and two from whatever, the other team's 33, or whatever the example is. I like it. The Diplomat. That's a TV show you should watch, Ryan. The Diplomat. And I think you can watch it with your fiancé on Netflix. You have Netflix?
I do have Netflix.
Every week, Netflix sends me an email, it feels like, that they've increased the subscription price by $15.
They're not shy about upping their prices.
No,
you are right about
really
that.
They're really not. Are you familiar with The Diplomat?
I am not.
Okay.
No.
It sounds boring, but it's really good. It's about the American ambassador to England. and her politics and diplomacy. I know it sounds terrible. It's great. It's the actress from The Americans. Did you ever watch The Americans?
I did not.
Oh, man. All-timer. Maybe watch that first, but you won't because it's 8 seasons. Just watch this show. Watch The Diplomat on Netflix.
Can I recommend a show for you? Reverse card.
Please do.
Also on Netflix, so free plug for them, House of Guinness. Have you heard of that show?
You know what? No, but it's by the same guy that did Peaky Blinders, right?
That I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is. It
has a little Succession vibe to it as well, if you like that. But it's basically the family of the founder of Guinness passes away, and three brothers and one daughter kind of fight for keeping the family brewery alive.
Here's why I haven't watched it yet. I love Guinness. That's not why. I've been to the Guinness Brewery. It was one of the great experiences of my life. And I'm worried that it's going to be historically inaccurate, and I don't really want to watch a bunch of made-ups about the... Do you know how accurate it is?
So, it does say in the beginning of every episode, it is fiction based on true stories.
Fiction based... Okay, so there's a lot of wiggle room there.
So, they are telling you this is not, you know, word... This is not a documentary, right? This is not word for word. This is what happened. There's some drama, I'm sure some made-up storylines as well. But it is loosely, I don't know how loosely, but like loosely based overall on the story of the family trying to keep the brewery alive in some turbulent political times.
Okay. You know what? I'm sold. Are you sold on mine? You're not sold on mine. I didn't sell mine as well. Mine is really good.
I mean, I think they sound somewhat
espionage,
similar.
Politics,
yeah.
Backstabbing.
Okay.
You know, she's the ambassador, but her husband, who's been banished, really wants her job, and so he's a problem, and he's charismatic, and she has a high... Yeah, yeah. And then she's got a little bit of a thing for the foreign secretary, you know, he's got the British accent.
Love interest.
Uh-oh, triangle, you're married, lady! Yeah, it's really good, dude.
I'm intrigued. I am intrigued. After House of Guinness, I'll have to check it out.
Okay.
Hopefully.
By the way, then we gotta go. We gotta get the Bogues, but... I love Guinness. Did you know it tastes better the closer you get to Dublin? It tastes different in New York versus Chicago versus L.A. If you go to Dublin and you have a Guinness in Dublin, actual music comes out of your glass as you drink it.
You're going to be shocked because you think I go nowhere. I have been to Ireland. I have been to Dublin. I have been, like you, to the Guinness factory, and I can 100% agree. The Guinness in Ireland, 50 times better than the Guinness here.
Quick bit of life advice for anyone listening. When you go to Dublin, this is personal experience. Do not go to the Guinness Brewery. Have a bunch of people give you free Guinness Brewery tickets so you have a lot of Guinness. Then, having had a lot of the Guinness, decide you should go to the Irish Whiskey Distillery. Walk over to the Irish Whiskey Distillery and then win, because like they pull a name out of a hat, the right to do a 10 whiskey tasting and do that. Don't do it.
I disagree. I think you should do that. That
Whether
sounds
you're 20
like a
or you're 50,
hell of a trip right there.
Don't do it. All right. What we will do are NFL power rankings after a sports flash from Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Bill, your Sports Flash is sponsored by Advantage Gold. Defense wins football games. The same could be true when it comes to protecting your retirement. Learn more about Advantage Gold today. Text GOLD to 85545 now and request your free gold investment kit. Visit AdvantageGold.com for terms. Message and data rates may apply. So where does Jaxon Smith-Njigba fit among the best receivers in the NFL? 8 catches, 123 yards, and a score in the Seahawks' late-night 27-19 win over the Texans. JSN has 3 straight with 100 yards and a touchdown, 5 total 100-yard games this season. The Bucs losing in Detroit 24-9, and they lose Mike Evans to a broken collarbone, maybe for the rest of the regular season. This was Evans' first game since turning his hamstring back in Week 3. The Lions, meanwhile, improving to 5-2, behind 218 scrimmage yards and 2 rushing scores from Jahmyr Gibbs. And the Toronto Blue Jays back in the World Series after rallying to win Game 7 with the Mariners 4-3. After rallying from 2-0 and 3-2 holes in the series, George Springer, a go-ahead 3-run homer bottom 7 last night. Game 1 of the World Series with the Dodgers in Toronto on Friday night. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I know what it's like to feel that, and I didn't want to do that to you because I'm a good person. Bye, I'm the best.
Sell.
Remember, this is an honest buy or sell. You said that early on.
It was the right answer. It was the definitely the correct answer.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. That's very funny. Bill Ryder, not the best with you here on the program. Brady Papinga will be on the show in 20 minutes. We'll talk some football with our buddy, former Packer. Do a little buy or sell. We need to maybe end of the show, dive into the World Series. Is set. It is ready to rock and roll. It is Blue Jays, Dodgers. And it is the opportunity, maybe, for Shohei Ohtani to cement himself as top five player of all time. Is that crazy? I mean, the guy already had. So we were talking about this, whether I got to get to other stuff. I want to get to this phone call in Atlanta. But we were talking about whether Shohei's game was the best game in the history of a single performance by anybody. Six scoreless innings in a closeout NLCS game. Two hitter, 10 strikeouts, 3 home runs. Don Larson's perfect game. I forgot, it's a perfect game. Do you remember where it was in the World Series? Right? It wasn't a closeout. It doesn't necessarily matter. It wasn't a closeout game, I don't think. That's up there. I mean, there was a random guy, I can't remember his name, in 1974 who threw a no-hitter and had 2 home runs and had 3 of his team's 4 RBI, but that was just in a regular season game. I don't think that counts. Honestly, maybe the greatest individual football NFL performance I've ever seen was Tom Brady in that comeback, because it's not just the stats, it's the 2-point conversions he had to convert as well, the 28-3 or whatever the hell that comeback was. But I think Shohei maybe had the best performance ever to get to the World Series. If that guy goes out there and, I don't know, hits 400, pitches another gem of a game, gets himself another World Series win, those are the stakes. So we'll hit that later in the show. All right, we got to get to some stuff. Let me just do a quick phone call before we power rank the NFL, which is hard, by the way. It's getting trickier. Let's go to Hotlanta. Well, it's not really Hotlanta now. It's October. Let's go to Atlanta. Jason, appreciate you, buddy. You are on Rider Than You.
Hey, Bill, listen, your last segment you had mentioned, brought up the psychology of sports, as well as actually mentioned Dublin, Ireland, and I just have some examples of how real, like, the psychology component of it is when you can't point to anything else, regardless of the opponent, but, like, the Steelers playing the Vikings in Dublin. There's no way the Steeler organization was going to lose that game playing in the ancestral homeland of their team's founders and all that. And then, like, revenge games, like, you know, Vrabel this past week, you know, winning at Tennessee. I mean, that you almost could circle that at the beginning of the year. And then especially the Broncos, I don't know how they did it, but you knew on the day that they were putting Demaryius Thomas in their ring of honor and honoring their, you know, Super Bowl team from 10 years ago, that they weren't going to lose that game either. It sure was quite a way they went about doing it, but you know, the psychology part is real.
Jason, I'm with you, dude. And I'm sorry to do this, Mariners fans, I'll even go last night. I was watching that game. I went out to a bar with a buddy, or like a restaurant bar, sitting outside in Culver City, which is a cool vibe in L.A., to watch the game. And I think it was 3-1. And I said to my friend, my friend's a Dodgers fan, I said, "Who do you want?" He goes, "I don't care." He goes, "I guess we're going to get the Mariners." And I go, "You're going to get the Blue Jays." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" And I go, "Dude, as a Cubs fan, I know what this feels like." And when they got runners on, well, I think it was second and third, Ryan, and Springer came up, the Mariners skipper could, and I know it's a hard call, I'm not, could have gone to their closer, but didn't. And they had been going inside two-seam fastball again and again and again because Springer was hurt. He hurt his knee, got hit by a pitch earlier in the series. And was it that game? I'm so turned around today with, it was like the game before? Two games? Yeah.
Game five, so 2 games before.
2 games before. And that dude actually did it on the first pitch, like went inside. And then I think it was the next pitch, Springer turned on it. So it's like, there's this fear, right? The manager maybe panics a little bit. Just bring in your closer. There's runners on second, they're just bringing your closer. And Springer talked about the fact that he just wanted to get the ball deep enough to get the guy on third in to cut the lead. My point is the psychology works good and bad both directions. The only reason I say this in all seriousness, because I basically said the Cubs are like the Mariners, and Ryan yelled at me this morning, "You want to win the series." You did. You yelled at me. You got mad at me. Your Mets fandom came out. Your Penn State fandom came out. But the only reason the Cubs won a World Series, they were playing Cleveland. They were both battling demons of the past, the psychology of feeling like you're going to lose. All right, 888-710-4ISN. Jason, I'm with you. Great call. This is a tough one. I have to leave out some good teams. And we're going to start with a controversy in today's NFL Power Rankings.
Some will rise. Others will fall. Let the ranking begin on Writer Than You's NFL Power Rankings. Number 5.
I'm putting the Chiefs on there. I'm sorry. I know their record is not as—it's just not as good as some of the other teams I'm going to have to leave off because there's only 5 teams. They're playing at a ridiculous level. They've won 4 out of 5. They beat a Detroit Lions team we just told you is the best team in the NFC. They're healthy. Rasheed Rice was so good in that game. The Chiefs are 5, and I doubt very much that they are going to be lower than that the rest of the year.
Number 4.
All right, this is where it gets tricky, Ryan. I'll do this quickly so we can get yours where I'm wrong. I know this is probably wrong. I have the Steelers here. I don't want them here. I know. Are you mad at me because I'm wrong, or are you mad at me because Aaron Rodgers is winning?
No, I'm not even mad. I'm just honestly surprised. After losing, I know it was a good game back and forth, but losing to the Bengals, I figured that that'd be enough. Because they're always kind of like, a little, you felt maybe not sold.
Here's the thing. I thought the wheels were going to come off with this football team because of Aaron Rodgers. And they're really good. And Mike Tomlin's right on pace. And I think that they're probably going to be better than last year if Rodgers can stay healthy.
Number 3.
I'll go with the Packers here. Although, I don't feel good about any of these teams. Especially the team that's number 1, Ryan. I don't feel good about any of these teams. But I still think that Green Bay, after the Lions, and based on how they're playing, have the highest upside in the NFC. And this is a really tough division because
Number 2.
I got Detroit at number 2. Look, that win last night was absolutely remarkable for what it, and we opened the show with this, what it says about Dan Campbell and what it says about that football team. They've got a high-powered offense that can put points on the board. Jared Goff is still that guy, and that defense, as I noted, has vastly improved from last year. This is a football team that probably should be the best in the NFL, but sometimes your record means you
number
are
number 1.
Yeah, the Colts, baby! I don't even know if I believe it. I don't even know if I think it's true. They are amazing offensively. They have a great offensive line. Daniel, your career's not over. Jones has played well. What is their record going to be when the season ends? Let me ask you this. What is the Colts record? Your Colts going to be when the season ends? What are they, 6-1?
They are 6-1 right now. They have some.
How many games are they going to win?
I mean, right now, they're 6-1. I would say they win 11. They go 11-5.
The thing is, they have Tennessee. Very winnable.
Very winnable.
At Pittsburgh, who you don't respect.
Don't respect.
Against Atlanta, who you loved.
But
at Kansas City.
Down.
That's a loss.
Can I throw some trivia by really fast?
Yeah.
There's one team that Patrick Mahomes has never beaten in the regular season. Who is it?
Colts.
Boom. Look at you.
Wow.
History says Mahomes loses
16-1. 16-1 Colts.
Let's go crazy. No
Let's
one's
go.
Ever done it.
All right. Can I have a few other ones?
At least you tried.
I'll go with the Patriots on this. I don't really know how to assess them. Their effort's amazing. Vrabel's a great coach. You know what they look like for the first time since maybe Tom Brady's final season as a Patriot? They look like a professionally run football team.
Better luck next time.
I'll go with the Bears. I just want to give them a little love. Keep winning. Keep trying. Keep striving. Are the Bears the third best team in the NFC North?
Yes.
I think they are, too.
Yes, definitely.
I don't even know who Minnesota's quarterback is. Neither do they.
That's a problem.
We're going to ask Brady Papinga. Can I get an honorable mention?
Here's your participation trophy.
Okay. Oh, all right.
That's honorable mention.
Oh, okay. Whoa. We're off the rails.
Sorry.
I like it all. So this is where I have the Bills and and the Eagles. I probably should have put them on there. I don't know what to make of them. There are some, the record is fine. I know what their ceiling is. I think there are clear weaknesses for each of those football teams. For Buffalo, I know it's easier said than done, but you stop Josh Allen, I'm not sure how they beat football teams. And for the Eagles, I'm still worried about their offense. So I've got them just lingering honorable mention. Do you think I overhyped the Chiefs? You obviously think the Steelers, which is fair. But I want to put somebody on here based on the entire season and not just this most recent week.
I actually think that's too low.
You want the Chiefs higher?
I would legitimately consider putting them number one.
Well, that's
legit. Maybe it's the Lions. The Colts, I think they have a fair argument for. But like again, like these power rankings, right, are like more weekly. Even though the record's not great, could anyone argue right now over the last two or three weeks, is anyone playing better football than the Chiefs? You dominated the Lions at home. Pretty damn good football team. Your offense right now, I know it's the Raiders. It's basically a bye. But the offense now with Rashee Rice looked pretty good in the first game back.
I mean, you shut them out, too. Right. It's not like, right? I mean, you just totally dominated them on both sides of the ball. You lost to the Jags, right? They lost to the Jags a few weeks ago. You won 4 or 5. But I don't... And the thing is, you did beat the Lions 2 weeks ago.
Right. In a game that you look pretty good in.
I mean, I agree they're better than the Colts. You have convinced me of that.
Well, that means that I guess
thank
you
for your support. If you had to pick the teams to represent to be in the Super Bowl right now, and you could not take the teams that were in that were in the conference championship games last year, and you can't take the Bills, the Ravens are not in the mix, the Chiefs, you can't take the Eagles, and nobody's taking the Commanders. Who are you taking?
I would take the Colts out of the AFC.
Would you really?
I mean, if you tell me I can't take the Bills or the Chiefs, and it's the field, I will take the Colts even with their shaky defense over anybody else right now.
I might take the Packers over the Lions, but it's one of those two teams for me.
I would agree with that. I think it's down to those two teams. Like the 49ers, they're very banged up.
Yeah.
I think it's
down
to those
two. They keep winning. They find ways to win. I mean, they're well coached.
4-1 with Mac Jones as QB. I think right now I would take the Lions right now. So Colts, Lions.
I think I would too. Dan Campbell is going to get. I mean, the thing is, I guess I have to take the Colts. Who else am I going to take in this stupid scenario that I presented to us?
We all know you don't love the Broncos at all, despite their 5-2 record.
It's the Colts, the Chargers, or the Steelers. That's
would
who it is.
Would you put the Patriots in that conversation?
I don't think so, but I think I told you I need to watch more of their football games with a closer eye.
Young quarterback
not
is a lot to
red
ask.
Red zone. Yeah. Look, probably not, but I do think Mike Vrabel is the Baker Mayfield of coaches. He overachieves and wins a playoff game when he shouldn't, but I'm not sure he's getting... And he did make... The Titans did make a conference championship under Vrabel. I'm not sure that's true this year. All right, let's ask all these questions of our guy Brady Papinga next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. Welcome into the show on this Tuesday. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for all the phone calls we've had. Those of you we couldn't get to, we apologize. 888-710-4ISN if you want to try to get in the queue and hang out with us. We love your perspective being part of the program, and we love you and appreciate you spending some time with us. Look, Netflix, The Diplomat, what did Ryan recommend? Oh, House of Guinness, a million streaming services. The NBA's back tonight. You have a lot of options, and that you choose on the Free Odyssey app or whatever affiliate is nice enough to air us, that you choose to spend some time with us. We appreciate you. Thank you. Again, phone number 888-710-4ISN. We're on X. I'm on their Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R, and Ryan _ Hickey, the number 3, is the executive producer of the program. We're going to talk to Brady Papinga here in a few minutes. We'll do buy or sell, hit a bunch of headlines from sports, bad news for Mike Evans and the Bucks. We'll get into that. We have not discussed the other Monday Night Football game very much. We will dive into that more later in the program, and we will preview a World Series between the Dodgers and the Blue Jays that should be pretty captivating and should be pretty compelling. As much as people don't like the Dodgers being in the World Series, they're great drama. They're fun to watch. But let's first talk to, I was saying this earlier, he's not just a great analyst, and he is. He's just a good person, And I love that. I love that Brady Papinga, who's built basically like Captain America, is also remarkably kind and cool and funny. Dude speaks fluent Spanish. I barely speak fluent English, my only language. And he has a Super Bowl ring for, yes, the Green Bay Packers. Good morning, Mr. Papinga.
Hey, good morning, Billy. How you doing, man? Always fun to jump on with you.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for being here. Let me ask you a sort of out of left field question. If you had to do power rankings, right? You had to rank every team in the NFL right now. Where would you put the Kansas City Chiefs on that list?
I just was talking about this exact thing a couple days ago. I'd put them in the top two. You know, wow. The Eagles and the Chiefs, and it's really comes down to kind of the commitment of the Chiefs to be a physical team. Because what people don't realize is with the 17-game season, it gives every single team more time to figure themselves out. And so a lot of times we get into this mode where we think all the first few weeks of the season, we're really going to see where teams are at. Or we think of the Bill Parcells famous quote, "You're as good as your record." Oh, that doesn't hold true anymore there, big Bill Parcells. The reality is teams are figuring themselves out, seeing what they have. And I'm telling you right now, Kansas City Chiefs are built this year as more of a contender than they were last year when they made it to the Super Bowl. So like I said, I look at them as one or two, just depending where they're at in terms of their commitment to physicality. Go ahead, Bill.
I also love your, hey, Bill Parcells, shut your face. That's not what you're saying. But like you're not what your record says you are. Because that quote gets thrown around a lot. I use it a lot. But you're right. It's the totality of things and where things are headed as much as it is whatever you've accomplished. In that context, would you like to downgrade the Indianapolis Colts, the team of the executive producer, who are 6-1, have the best record in the NFL?
Absolutely. I'm not going to say that they're not, playoff caliber, which they for surely are. But I mean, they got an unexperienced quarterback. They got a team that I think is just catching. Like people aren't really taking them serious. Their opponents, especially, and they're kind of shell shocked, right? But that's not going to happen when you really get into the playoffs and you have a full season of film and understanding who these people are in terms of the whole totality of who the Colts are. But, yeah, they're first really a playoff caliber team, but I wouldn't consider them one of the best teams in the NFL or at least one to win the championship.
And Brady Papinga, I mentioned how kind you are. I don't want you to be worried about Ryan Hickey. He's a Penn State fan, so he's sort of prepared for being underwhelmed by a team that sets expectations to a place where they can't get to. I'm not nice. Bill Reiter talking to Brady Papinga here on the show. Right? It's mean, right? So, Brady, last night's – look, you played, and I really want your view on this. Dan Campbell and what he's done in Detroit obviously was already successful before this year, was already impressive. He had already established himself as a winning coach. But he, we all know, he lost the two coordinators who got a lot of credit for their success. Those guys went to be head coaches. We thought maybe the offense would tank. We thought maybe the defense, which wasn't amazing last year, but in big moments would sometimes come up big, and obviously was a great team, would take a step back. And you saw last night, I mean, they handled Tampa Bay. They had a bunch of guys in their secondary injured. Didn't matter. Shut down Baker Mayfield and a pretty good Bucs team. And I find from a distance Campbell to be funny and inspiring and interesting. Behind the scenes, how much of an impact, and I'm not taking anything away from his X's and O's or his ability to bring in the right coordinators, but how much of an impact can a coach make on charisma or leadership or the opposite of that? Can that have an impact on performance for football players?
Oh, absolutely, because the game of football is always played in a state of tremendous discomfort, whether you're tired, whether you're hurt, whether you're under pressure, stressed, whatever. And when you can find somebody that can meet you where you're at, and they can kind of feel you and have empathy with you, which a former player can do that, but the way that Campbell does it is so authentic and genuine, and then he's just absolutely honest. That's another thing I think people feel, is kind of lost in this, is that there's not a lot of honesty in the NFL. A lot of times you're going to hear one thing and then they'll do another, you'll be told one story and do another, but he comes across as genuine, straight up, and he lets you know, like, look, this is what you got to do to play. This is what you got to do to be our starter. And when you make a clear path for your team of what they need to do in terms of objectives to achieve their goals, then it becomes really easy. And then on top of it, you have somebody that you feel like, man, he's a bit in my shoes. So when he speaks, I know he's coming from a place of experience. That to me is tremendously powerful, especially if you don't have somebody like a Tom Brady or a Lawrence Taylor, you know, because I bring up those guys because basically Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick, they're the complete opposite. They never played. So the actual their team didn't have that advantage. So they had to draw that same type of inspiration from in-house players. The Detroit Lions don't have to do that. They have coaches, not just the head coach, but you have Kelvin Shepard as a D coordinator too, who's been there, done that. And they have a very, like I said, I'd say in-touch way of being able to inspire their team through empathy and through clear and very distinct objectives that they need to achieve in order to achieve their goals individually.
Super Bowl champion Brady Papinga here on the show. Eight-year NFL linebacker, a huge chunk of his career with the Packers. That's where he got that ring, a ring, by the way, that Brady once let me wear, which is very kind of him. BYU alum, founded XPT gym equipment, and is on Twitter, on the old social media, on the old X, at Brady Papinga. Brady, all right, do this for me. I'm really curious your view on this. You brought up Lawrence Taylor. I mean, it feels like the Packers have a version of that guy right now. Micah Parsons was awesome over the weekend. The Detroit just won a signature game. The Bears are starting to win games. I don't really know who the Vikings quarterback is. I'm not sure they know, but they've been pretty good. How would you power rank the NFC North right now?
Well, I mean, the NFC North, it's got to be Detroit until you knock them off, right? Okay. I mean, that's how I always believe in, you know, ranking teams, especially if they're in that spot, which Detroit is. And I know the Packers beat them in the first year, but Detroit is showing why last year they're the champions of the NFC North. But then the Packers, you know, and then it's just the Bears and the Vikings. I mean, they're both, to me, wild cards. The Bears are playing pretty good. They're only going to get better with the new coach, new staff. Everybody's getting more comfortable with that new system. And then, like you mentioned, with the Vikings, they got to figure out who the quarterback is, which I believe they think it's J.J. McCarthy. They had such a kind of respect gained during that win against the Bears that they feel like they got something special there, which I would agree with. I think that's a great assessment of them. So we got to see what happens when he comes back. But, I mean, they played tough against the Eagles. You know, the Eagles just were on fire. Jalen Hurts had his best passing game in who knows how long. And when you couple that with their effective rushing offense, that's a tough recipe to have to deal with. But overall, yeah, it's a heck of a division, man. I mean, the Packers could come out winning in that one. You know, the Bears could surprise us by the end of the year. It's a fun division, and it could very well end up like it did last year, where all three of them qualified for the playoffs.
Thank you for pointing out that it was the one Bears team. Yeah, it was the Bears who failed to
get there. Forgot about that.
Brady, it is a great, it's a really fun division. Brady Papinga here on the show. Less fun, less interesting, more toxic, the Miami Dolphins. I'm curious, I'm sure you followed the Tua saga where Tua seemed to throw his guys under the bus and then came back and kind of apologized and used the term void of silence. I still don't know what that term means. And then after the game had some interesting comments about having to balance leadership with playing. Obviously, I'm going to have an opinion. People have an opinion. You played. Is this much ado about nothing, or did Tua cross some line that would actually matter with his teammates?
Oh, he absolutely crossed the line, because from a teammate's perspective, when you're looking at the quarterback, you're not looking for him to point fingers, because that's just weak. What you want your quarterback to do is you want your quarterback to have a mentality where he believes that it's all on him. And as a matter of fact, you'd like everybody to believe that. Like, hey, everything that I win, no matter what, and I take full responsibility when we don't win. And so I think that was a real poor choice on his end of leadership to try to, I think he's trying to inspire his teammates to try to kind of, you know, juice them a little bit, get them going, but that's not what you do. Guys aren't going to respect that. They're going to look at you like, hey, man, like, we're depending on you and protecting you with our lives and our livelihoods. Please show us the urgency that you want us to play with. And that's not happening down there. And It's looking pretty bleak down in Miami, although Miami's pretty sweet.
It's a great city. I've lived there. It is, yeah, the bleakest thing about Miami is its football team, you know? I mean,
unfortunately, yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. When I was in Miami in 2010, Brady, I tried really hard to dust off the old high school and couple years of college Spanish language skills. Man, I was bad at it. You're perfectly fluent, right? So you can roll into Miami and you can rock and roll.
Oh, yeah, man. I stay fluent. I work with a couple of, you know, guys who are Latinos every day. So we always are rapping in Spanish. And yeah, I could dip right in there, man, and they would be looking at me very confused. Like, why is this big white gringo who looks like a Viking talking Spanish? What is this? They always look at me like, what the heck is happening here?
Dude, your Spanish, it's good, too. Like, it's my dream to learn to speak Spanish. And someday when I accomplish that after I've retired, yeah, I'll come back and I'll try. But I can't roll those R's. I'm an idiot. Brave Pinga hanging out here on the it's hard, dude. I can't do it physically.
Yeah, you got to practice, buddy.
I know I do.
Practice.
Last year, you may not remember this, but last year, really early in the college football season, you were the first person, and you did it here, that I heard anywhere really tout that BYU should be taken seriously and was a legitimate program. And a lot of the teams in that conference turned out to have a chance. But this is before anybody was sort of giving BYU credit. They just beat Utah, which I'm sure sent much joy through your entire being. They're ranked, what, 11th in the country. Obviously, we've got an expanded college football playoff. What is BYU's level? What is possible for them this year?
Well, the thing is last year when I was watching them, you know, I'm very close. My brother coached with them. I'm kind of like, you know how they have embedded reporters? Sometimes I'll go in as an embedded consultant like I was last week, and I'll practice with them, help them out, and all that stuff. So I have a little bit more knowledge than the average person about BYU. But one thing that's clear, since BYU joined the Big 12, their recruiting has gone through the roof. And they have by far the most talented team, first, second, third team that BYU's ever had. You know, we were dealing with some injuries at our inside backer with Isaiah Glasker, who's the next Brian Urlacher, by the way. And then Jack Kelly, who was also a phenomenal NFL caliber linebacker. And then our second guys came in and did phenomenal. I mean, that does not happen, you know, 5-6 years ago. And so that's been the biggest thing, is we got our recruiting going. We have one of the best coaching staffs in the country, Jay Hill, who's the defensive coordinator of the Cougs. He's as good as any head coach you'd find out there in terms of game management, understanding the totality, macro view of things. And, you know, he's our associate head coach. Then Kalani's phenomenal. But the thing is our fronts are as good as any fronts that you'll find in the country. When you're talking defensive line, offensive line, we're tough as nails to run the ball straight at. Our guys control line of scrimmage on the offensive side. That Utah team is known to have some of the best fronts in college football, and we threw their defensive line around. And I've never seen that with a Utah front, and I don't know how long. And so that's why BYU is going to be in the conversation, because they have the defensive and offensive linemen to go with it. And then you got Bear Bachmeyer, the true freshman that's just been phenomenal. He's a better thrower-type Tim Tebow kind of player. Big, thick lower body, runs with power, but, man, he can make some throws. Like, against Utah, he had a phenomenal back shoulder fade to Chase Roberts for a touchdown. He was zipping the ball in slants and outs and all these timing routes with the RPOs. And I mean, he's just everything that you want in a running power quarterback, yeah, with this kid. And he's, like I said, a true freshman. So we just got to stay humble. That's their biggest thing, is they got to handle success in any sport. In life, that's usually the biggest challenge, is how do you handle success? And if they do, they're going to be right there at the end of the year.
Brady Papinga, you make an interesting point about BYU that I think applies broadly about how the Big 12 has allowed them to improve their recruiting. We've had revolution after revolution after revolution, right? The conference realignment is game-changing for programs. And for the Pac-12 that no longer exists, obviously shifted a lot of fortunes for better or worse, depending on where programs landed. You've got NIL, which changes the game. You've got transfer portal. You've got this sort of free agent. You've, in this new environment, right, you have an Indiana that's really, really good right now. How many programs do you think are going to be capable of turning their fortunes around in significant enough ways that in 5 or 6 or 7 years, programs that never competed at the highest of levels can do that or not?
It's going to be hard. I think if anything, you're going to see a lot of teams like the Oklahomas, Oklahoma State, these kind of blue blood teams that kind of inherited their spots in the big conferences. You know, you're seeing it already in the Pacific Northwest with Oregon State and Washington State are completely becoming irrelevant. And so what you're seeing is, and just so everybody knows, none of these teams have really ever operated with an income. And I'm talking like making money with their athletic programs. And now that they're having to operate like businesses, $1 billion. People may think, oh, that's amazing. Look, they got all this money. No, no, no. They did that because they can't make their ends meet. And so what that tells me is there is a lot of teams out there that right now are in that prime position that cannot fiscally, meaning they cannot fiscally compete, meaning they can't run a business. And so what's going to happen is you're going to have legitimate business operation skills in these athletic programs to be relevant. because the donors are going to get tired. I promise you. And the money's going to get crazy. It's going to be to where you don't have enough donors to support your team. You're going to have to literally run a business that can make its own money and pay your players and coaches and the whole operations based off of business operations. And so what I see in this is it's going to just the landscape. And again, you saw Nick Saban, you're even seeing Dabo Sweeney out of Clemson, where they were crying about this new system because guess what? They don't know how to operate in it. It scares them because they lost their, between quotations, competitive advantage, and they got out. And you know, Dabo Sweeney, he's still in, but he's not all in. He's not even wanting to use NLI. He's not even really into it. He's trying to operate with this traditional model that he had success with, and he can't because he can't funnel in the top tier talent like he used to. And so it's going to come down to, Bill, just how well can you run a business? And there's not many teams or athletic departments throughout the country that really can, and they're trying to figure that out. And they will. There's, you know, I think the elite teams like the Alabamas, Ohio States, Texas, those kind of teams are going to figure it out. I mean, you made a joke with Penn State, but they can't figure it out. I don't know if you guys heard Urban Meyer. There's also a population shift to where, you know, in Pennsylvania with all the steel that was happening when we were prime in the steel manufacturing era, that you had a ton of talent embedded in Pennsylvania. All that's moved south. And now you got to be able to go recruit them. You can't depend on your homegrown talent anymore. And that takes skills. You know, Ohio State's figured that out. But what takes more than anything now with the new surroundings, you got to have money. You got to have cash flow. And like I said, a lot of these athletic departments don't know how to accumulate and keep cash flow.
The outstanding Brady Papinga. Brady, I already took you too long because you're that good. I'd keep talking to you for an hour, but you have stuff to do and I'll get yelled at. So let me just say thank you as always, my friend, for the insight. You're the absolute best, dude.
Always a pleasure, my man. Have a great day. We'll be in touch.
Thank you, buddy. Brady Papinga, I love that guy. That guy's the best. Super Bowl champion, former Packer, friend of the show. We're going to do a little buy or sell with Ryan Hickey. We haven't gotten enough Ryan in the show today. We're going to sprinkle in some Ryan Hickey magic next here on Rider Than You.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast. Welcome back to Rider Than You.
It's not really called a Truman Letter. I just call it a Truman Letter. Harry, is it S. Truman? As in super good at history? Harry S. Don't know if it's an S. Truman. It'd be funny if it's Harry Dietra. I don't know. Harry Truman. Why am I going with the middle name? I don't even know it. Just skip it, Ryder.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Ryan A. Hickey. Yes or no?
That'd be a no.
Okay. Got it. I have another TV show for you. If you don't want to watch The Diplomat, you could just watch The Agency. It's about the CIA in, weirdly, London also, on Paramount Plus. Very good. More violent, though. More, what's going to happen? Dun-dun-dun.
Okay.
That's your vibe.
I'm both sound intriguing. I hope to eventually get to both at some point. I'm very slow.
I know what it looks like when you lie. That's what it looks like. That's what it looks like. This portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam, just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Rider Than You.
This ain't a lie. I can promise you that, Bill.
Talk to me.
It was another rough offensive performance from the Houston Texans, this time on Monday night, as they scored only 13 offensive points and have now scored fewer than 14 points in half of their games. The offensive line was a mess, run game was non-existent, and CJ Stroud struggled as well. Buy or sell, the Texans offense has been one of the biggest disappointments in the NFL so far.
I will buy.
Buy.
It's also a reminder that we react, as we're going to every single thing that happens in the NFL, week to week, moment to moment. But in fact, the realities of the league are played out over 6 weeks, 6 month, multi-year timelines. Because C.J. Stroud has gone, and the way that he performed his rookie year was real. He came in, he was great, they won 10 games, they won a playoff game. And then last year, the way in which he wasn't quite as good, but they were okay, was real, and he's been poor this year. And so, yes, it's been a disappointment, and what's happening with Stroud isn't necessarily permanent, but it's extraordinarily disconcerting if you were looking forward to watching him play at a high level for a long time.
And just as a reminder to kind of pile on here, makes no sense. Remember, they traded Laremy Tunsil, their left tackle, back in the offseason. Right. That offensive line, got way worse. Does not make any sense. Not look good at all.
And that is a fair point, is that they don't have the signature receiver they thought they were going to bring in last year. They don't have the offensive line that they need. Those things are greatly significant. And in some ways, you wonder if maybe the Texans' leadership drank the Kool-Aid about Stroud a little too much and didn't understand what we're seeing with half the guys in the league now are rehabilitating their careers. Daniel Jones being maybe the best example is the ability to be a great quarterback is important, but the situation that allows that is just as important. You got to put these guys in a position to succeed.
I mean, we've seen Mahomes struggle at times, right? When the offensive line's not playing well or guys are banged up. Like, even the best quarterback in the league needs help. Doesn't make sense.
It's baffling how the NFL understands the critical importance of quarterback play and then goes and just self-sabotages. Maybe the best example I've ever seen is, and I think Brady, somebody brought this up this week on the show, is when Bill Belichick made a defensive guy, Matt Patricia, the offensive coordinator for Mac Jones' second year. I mean, the pure arrogance of it. The idiocy, it's idiotic.
To say the least, you undercut your own success.
You undercut your own success.
Makes no sense. The Buccaneers, Bill, they were dominated by the Lions 24-9 in the other Monday Night Football game. How about Detroit's defense? They held Tampa Bay to just 220 passing yards, forced two turnovers, and held the Bucs on third and fourth down combined, just going 6 of 21. To add injury to insult for the Bucs, Mike Evans yesterday broke his collarbone, could miss the rest of the season. Buy or sell, Bill, the Buccaneers, after this loss and now with the Mike Evans injury, should no longer be considered Super Bowl contenders.
He can come back for the playoffs.
Could. It's not a guarantee he's out.
It's not a guarantee.
He's also certainly a bit older.
It's not a guarantee he'll be back and effective. I will sell your question.
Sell.
I think they can still be Super Bowl contenders, but I think they go from that second tier to that long shot tier. Are the Chargers currently Super Bowl contenders? Probably not. But if you made me sort of do a tier that's the Chiefs are the first tier, and then there's a second tier, and then there's, have a chance, then there's a fourth tier of them, maybe they'd be in that category now. They have gone from tier 3 to tier 4 that I just made up on the spot.
Love that. One day after getting embarrassed by the Browns, it was status quo in Miami on Monday, Bill. The Dolphins did not fire head coach Mike McDaniel, and the embattled head coach even backed his quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. Well, sort of.
Yeah, he's going to take the snaps this week, and he's going to be our starter this week. And my expectation is that we don't throw 10 picks.
Oh, my God. I thought it was AI when I first saw it, because there's some AI stuff that's out there.
Yes. Including one of our listeners.
Let me just change the question for you.
Okay.
Buy or sell, Mike McDaniel hates Tua Tagovailoa.
Buy.
Yes. Hates him.
Hates him. Would you buy
100% with you. Yeah, buy.
Buy.
Buy or sell, Mike McDaniel's being forced to start Tua this week.
Couldn't yours is the backup, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll buy.
Buy.
Look, like, either being forced or trying to read the tea leaves of how to save his job, right?
And seeing maybe how bad Quinn Ewers is in practice and going, I have no shot at this guy. Maybe at least have a prayer with Tua.
Yep.
I expect him to not throw 10 picks. It's still funny.
It's crazy, right?
Speaking of crazy, Bill, the NFL announced yesterday that they are suspending Broncos linebacker Dre Greenlaw one game after he followed and then reportedly threatened head referee Brad Allen after Sunday's game. Buy or sell. This is an appropriate punishment from the NFL.
I mean, what was the threat specifically?
That has not been released. Yeah, there has been video released of him. There is video of him chasing him down and yelling at him.
I've seen it.
There's no transcript right now of what was actually said.
I can't answer the question without knowing. So I'll buy that it's acceptable because you got to think they know it,
They use the word threaten, not berate. We've seen so many head coaches say expletives towards referees and yell at them, you stink, You bleeped up.
You mother bleeper. Do right. something anatomically impossible to yourself. Right, right, right.
I think when you say threaten, he must have been like, I'll kill you.
But if he says, I'm going to kick your butt, is that, I don't know. Is that a game?
You can't have players That's threatening fair. Referees. Boy, crazy. Crazy game, and I guess even crazier finish on top of that as well. Let's go back to Sunday, Bill. The Eagles got their passing offense in order as Jalen Hurts threw for 326 yards and three touchdowns, with two of them going to A.J. Brown as they beat the Vikings. The 326-yard performance was the first 300-yard passing game for Jalen Hurts since Week 3 of 2024. Buy or sell, this performance will unlock the Eagles' offense moving forward.
Sell.
Sell.
I'll believe when I see it. I could be wrong. A guy won a Super Bowl. I still would venture to bet that the Eagles won more despite Nick Sirianni than because of Nick Sirianni. Doesn't mean I'm right. But before you throw up your hands and scream at me, whoever you are, that was true for Doug Peterson. It was. Have you ever seen, what's it called?
I'll save you the time. No.
The duck that laid golden eggs in the Disney movie where the duck... the lady's making the food, and then she looks to her left, and the wind, it's from the 70s, blows the pages, and she puts the wrong stuff in the batter, so no one knows what it is. She doesn't know what happened, and then a duck eats it, shouldn't, and then it lays golden eggs.
I have actually heard of the concept. I couldn't tell you the
It's the accidental name. Recipe that I'm pointing to, where Doug Peterson didn't even know Nick Foles was going to be the, right? It was alchemy. And I think last year, maybe that Eagles team won despite their head coach. Because there were credible reports that Jalen Hurts basically hated Sirianni. You know what buys you time and makes everyone think everything's okay? Winning a Super Bowl. Do I think they actually became best friends and are hanging out and playing golf together and send each other funny gifts, you know, day after? No, I don't. So my point is, inconsistency can sort of poke through when you don't like the people you work with. I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of the reason. And this was just talent winning out for a game, not necessarily a change in the dynamic of what's going on in Philadelphia.
Let's finish with a little baseball, Bill, as the Toronto Blue Jays are going to the World Series for the first time since 1993, thanks to one big swing from George Springer.
1-0 pitch. Swing and a fly ball. Left field and deep. A Rosarena turns. Gone! A Springer dinger! 4-3 Blue Jays in the bottom of the seventh.
As I'm sure you can tell, that is courtesy of the Blue Jays Radio Network and Ben Schulman. Back for the first time since 1993, the Blue Jays are in the World Series, and they will have home field advantage as they host the LA Dodgers starting Game 1 on Friday night. Dodgers are heavy favorites, Bill, in this to win the series, according to Vegas. Buy or sell, the World Series will go at least 6 games.
Sell.
I think it's going to be a wrap. Let me ask you a question.
Blue Jay sweep is what you're saying?
Something like that, only no. That was
very
funny.
Blue will win.
By the way, you're funny. I don't know what Stuart Kovacs was talking about. You are funny. All right, so I'm talking to you about creating enough disdain, jealousy, frustration, anger toward the Dodgers, legitimate or otherwise, that there might be a change in sort of the motivation of owners to try and use the upcoming CBA expiring, whatever the consequences, to change things, right? All right, so buy or sell that a Dodgers sweep of the Blue Jays would be more impactful than, say, the Dodgers giving Kyle Tucker $1 billion in the offseason?
Ooh.
Which one's more impactful of people being... finally saying enough is enough, we got to make changes?
I would say Kyle Tucker, so I guess I'll sell.
It's a little confusing.
I think that Kyle Tucker would be more impactful just because even if they could win in 7, hell, the Blue Jays could win in 7. If it's one of those, because the Blue Jays are not a popular franchise. They're
right,
good.
Right.
I think they're top 5, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So it's like big market versus big market, big spender versus big spender. If they lose 5, 6, 7, whatever it is, and you go out and add the best bat in the offseason to add to Shohei and Mookie Betts and the pitching staff and Freeman, I think that would be a bigger, like, all right, we got to stop this.
So what's going to actually, I think, happen is the Dodgers are going to win in 5, and then they're going to give Kyle Tucker $1 billion, and people's heads are going to explode.
The double whammy.
I think it's coming.
Forget 2027. Will we have baseball in 2026?
People here think that Kyle Tucker is a lock. That Tucker to the Dodgers is a lock. Yeah. Like Dodgers reporters inside people here. Yeah.
I mean, if you're Kyle Tucker, let's just say the money is even, right? The Dodgers don't blow you out of the water. Do you want to go to the Dodgers?
Yeah.
You've won a World Series with the Astros, so it's like you're ringless.
Fair. Here's the thing. Money is generational wealth, right? You're talking, you know, whatever. I don't even get to buy an island. I don't know what people with that kind of money do once they get to the next level of money. Los Angeles is an amazing place to live, and I imagine it's even more amazing if you have money. I mean, the thing about L.A., dude, L.A.'s awesome. It's just so expensive. But not if you're Kyle Tucker, right? You're living a version of it that's very different than the rest of us. The weather's great. Now, this is true for Wrigley, too, but especially with the renovations. Dodger Stadium is, you've been there, right? It's historically beautiful. You've never been there.
Never.
It's
beautiful, I want to go dude. Really bad. Never been.
And they have some, they'll mix in a good amount of day games, right? And the weather's amazing. And so just, you're, and Wrigley Field's special, but you are, I mean, you are at one of the most beautiful places in the world to play your, to sort of do what you do for a living. Surrounded by incredible players. You're guaranteeing yourself playoff baseball every single year, which it's not just rings for guys, right? People love to play playoff baseball if you're a competitor. So you guarantee yourself playoff baseball every year. Every year you're going to be in the playoffs. That's not, I guess the Yankees that's true for, but even as you expand, that's not a lock for everybody, right? So I obviously don't want him to be a Dodger. I understand the appeal. I get it. You've never been to Dodger Stadium.
Never.
So you
been.
Came here and you blew off Dodger Stadium and me.
Well, I will say the only time I've been to LA in my life was for like 30 hours when I went to go see Penn State in the Rose Bowl. So
and
I couldn't even go
to
Dodger Stadium.
You skipped the two most important things, me and Dodger Stadium.
And maybe I paid for it because that day it rained. I've watched the Rose Bowl my entire life. I've never seen a cloud in the sky. And
it rained at the Rose
for
Bowl?
Three quarters of the game.
That was Los Angeles telling you, why didn't you hang out with Bill? And we could have gone to a Dodgers game together. Think about that.
On January 2nd?
Okay, well, we couldn't have done that.
So I think I'm
that
free from
tricky.
Now on, but I did that
to you,
which is unfair. That was
still,
a little tough. Let's open the still. Gates and let's play a little ball. Come on.
You know, let's pretend you could have. Let's pretend there was an exhibition game. Maybe Clayton Kershaw had his ping pong tournament that day. I don't know.
Rehab assignment know. In the stadium. We can go and watch, break in.
It is a special place. It's also going to become annoying if they keep doing this, which they're going to. But first, they're going to have to win the World Series, which they're probably going to do as well. Let's talk a little baseball and a little heartbreak and what happened to the Mariners and that George Springer dinger after we get a sports flash from Andrew Bogusch.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Bill, this Sports Flash sponsored by Prize Picks. Football's heating up and baseball's back, or basketball is back. So download the Prize Pick app and use code PRIMETIME to get $50 in bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. This has only happened once before in MLB postseason history.
1-0 pitch. Swing and a fly ball. Left field and deep. A Rosarena turns. Good! A Springer dinger!
Oh, that Springer dinger. A go-ahead three-run homer, bottom seven. Just the second ever go-ahead homer with his team trailing by multiple runs that late in a winner-takes-all game. The Jays rallying to take Game 7 from the Mariners 4-3, returning to the World Series for the first time since 1993, Game 1 with the Dodgers in Toronto on Friday night. The Seahawks lost the turnover battle 4-1, but won the game 27-19 over the Texans. The Lions only a little less sloppy in their 24-9 home win over the Bucks. I'm Andrew Bogusch.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the program. It is Writer Than You here on the Infinity Sports Network. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for listening. Phone number 888-710-4ISN. 888-710-4476. Ryan Hickey's the executive producer. Ryan_Hickey in the number 3. Sports writer for me, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. The Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces DOD veterans and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. The Blue Jays bullpen shut down the Mariners' bats the final two games of the American League Championship Series to send Toronto their first World Series since 1993. In Game 6 and 7, the Blue Jays' pen allowed just one run on two hits while striking out 10 over almost nine innings, 8 2/3 innings, including retiring the final seven Mariners hitters to clinch the Game 7 win. Ryan, this reminds me, you had asked me whether or not I thought either of the teams that went down 2-0 at home could come back and win. And I think I said yes, right? But I think I also said it would have to be the Blue Jays, and because the Mariners' history might. I am so bummed that I was right. And I'm not taking anything against the Blue Jays. Amazing win. Love it for Toronto. I relate to heartache in sports more than I do success. And I don't know this because I didn't grow up rooting for the Yankees. I would imagine James Ward, who maybe if you're listening wherever you are, you don't know that name, but a former producer here at the Infinity Sports Network when it was CBS Sports Radio, now works at, I think, SNY in New York City. Great guy. One of my favorite people I've ever met. One of the nicest people I've ever met. Couldn't find him more of a gentleman. I've never had a bad thing to say about him, except when he's talking about the Yankees, and I've never seen someone more obnoxious. Like, it is the perfect encapsulation of... And so if you have grown up as a Boston sports fan this century, or as a Yankees fan, if you're a... And I don't mean Stuart Kovacs. I mean if you're really an Alabama fan, right? And you were from Alabama, your parents went to Alabama, or you went to Alabama, and you just happened to have the Saban era come into your life. If you grew up with that... If you're a Dodgers fan, if you're from L.A., if you're a Warriors fan, right? You're a 20-year-old and you're a Warriors fan, you're from the Bay. Do you think you relate to success more than you do failure? Because for me, when I watched Toronto come back and win that game, my entire sort of emotional instinct and feeling was, oh my God, that's so brutal for the Mariners. Oh, those fans, I know what that feels like. Do you think Yankees fans are watching that or Alabama fans going, what a comeback? Like, oh, winners win. Like, what a way. Don't you think fans experience these things based on how they've been molded by their teams?
Probably, right, because you don't know any better. Like, if you're used to watching your team come back and win big games time and time and time again, then you don't know what it's like to have your team consistently come up short or not get it done. Or like you said, vice versa. I feel like you are, for the most part, you root or you're trained what your experiences and previous history tell you.
What do you think what have you been trained as a sports fan? Mets fan? Penn State alums, that's new-ish. Like, for me, Mizzou was new. But I had Iowa before, and you had Notre Dame before. Who else you got in there?
I mean, I got the only team I've ever seen winning championships, the Colts.
Oh, that's a good one. And you like Peyton Manning, so you kind of, I'm assuming you rooted for Denver.
Yes, a little bit. And then all of a sudden, okay. Denver started, you know, trying to claim him as theirs, and then all of a sudden that started to turn to disdain as the tenure went on.
That's really funny.
So I'm trained to be a loser. The Mets have broken my heart. Penn State's broken my heart. But I will say I'm an optimist. So it's funny. I was watching that game yesterday. I almost texted you. Mariners got 1-0 in the first game. I'm like, all right, here we go. Fast start. Mariners quiet down the crowd. And I get suckered in every time to think this is going to be, like, I always think this is going to be the time they break through. And more times than not, like you said, winners win, losers lose, find a way to lose.
And Mariners fans, I'm not dancing on your grave. And as Ryan pointed out, I have a World Series, so it might sound obnoxious when I go, I'm a Cubs fan, I can relate. But I'm a Cubs fan, and I can relate. I mean, I couldn't get a ticket, I was on Waveland, but I was at Wrigley Field outside of it for the Bartman game. And was supposed to stay for Game 7 and just drove home. Because I knew what was going to happen.
I joke with you, but you have earned that World Series victory. With decades of heartache.
And a Missouri fan.
And the Bears.
And a Bears fan. I don't really remember. I don't remember the 86 Bears. I was too young. I don't remember it. It has no emotional impact for me. I know it happened, but it didn't happen to me as a fan in a way that, like, oh, I got one. What a relief. So my entire thing is I just feel awful for the Mariners. And not just what a year they had, not just the fact that they've never been to a World Series. They were up 2-0 in the series. And I said home field advantage doesn't matter in baseball. Or is much less significant. But they still went to Toronto and won the first two games of the series.
Can I ask you this question?
Yeah.
I saw Cal Raleigh say this after the game. He called the season a failure. Even though this was the farthest the Mariners have ever gotten in their franchise history.
Right.
Game 7, ALCS.
Yeah, it's a failure. I don't want reporters asking that. It's a legitimate question, but I don't like it. So I didn't see it. I didn't want to watch the post game. I was bummed for the Mariners. It would depend on the content. If he was asked that question, then you're baited, right? If it was just like, you know, hey, in the locker room or at the podium maybe, you know, it was a great season. The guys were so bummed, but it's a failure. Then I'm here for it because I want my guys. I want my leaders. He also, by the way, took the blame for the home run. He said basically we went with a lot of two seam fastballs. Maybe it was the wrong. I called for the wrong pitch. Maybe called for the wrong pitch because they were. And getting in the weeds here, a lot of the guys on the Blue Jays look at tablets and sort of study the data. Springer doesn't do that. He's an instinct guy, so they leave him alone with that. So he knew. I mean, it's not like someone says, hey, they're going inside, two-seamer, look for it. No, don't tell me. But he's not looking at the data. He's not looking. So he went up there with a totally old-school, hobbled up there with an old-school approach and was able to basically outthink the manager of the Mariners, the catcher, who's the best player and leader of the Mariners, and obviously the guy that they brought in from the bullpen. So it's a hell of a baseball chess match. I mean, it's an incredible sports moment. And I don't want to take that away from Toronto. Amazing performance. It's just I feel so bad for the Mariners. Also, last note, good for baseball. You don't want both games on the West Coast because it creates some awkward sort of, do you start the games really early in the day on the West Coast time, or do you, because you have an East Coast audience, this at least creates a little balance. Maybe pulls in maybe more of the country, right? If you're at least in that division, the American League, maybe in the East, you can kind of, I don't know. I feel bad for the Mariners. I'm trying to be positive. I'm trying to be positive. All right, well, great show today. Fun show today. I'm not sure it was great, but it was a fun show today. Great work by Pretty Bapinga. Great work from Andrew Bogish. Appreciate him. Thank you to Ryan Hickey. I'm Bill Ryder. Appreciate you. We'll see you here tomorrow on Ryder Than You.